All right, everybody, welcome to the Hustle is a Skill podcast. I'm your host, Brad Wilkai, alongside my co-host, Brian Oringer. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Brad. We're, just about right at the halfway point of the season, right? It's reminding me how freaking long a season is. Like 42 games in, it feels like it's been, five seasons already, and we're only halfway, so how about that?
I know, it's crazy, and it's like, wow, 42 already, because, we were talking on the last podcast, Christmas, it kind of feels like the introduction back into, hey, NBA's going. You're like, oh, yeah, but there's like 20 games done all of a sudden. And so now, what, just started? We're 40 games in? So, yeah, they've been playing for a while.
Right. Yeah, it's the doldrums now, This is the period where we see which teams are, which teams are going to get bored, especially going into All-Star. That's always a hard one for teams to keep focus, with that long vacation looming and everybody's minds on, going to a beach or whatever you can do now. All good and excited to talk some ball with you.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. We got a lot to talk about today for the listeners as well. Clay's back. We'll dive into that. We're going to peel back the hood a little bit, talk about Brian's experiences in the locker room and in the front office, just in the organization, and give you a little insight into what really goes on inside the NBA. So that'll be fun. But we got to start with Memphis right now because, Brian, they've won 10 in a row. They've beaten really good teams, it's not like they're just beating up on cupcakes. They're now 29-14 on this win streak right now. John Morant has inserted himself as not only just a superstar. We're talking MVP caliber guy, like perennial MVP type talent. This has been an explosion. I think we had a feeling it was going to come, but man, they announced themselves onto the scene.
Yeah, they're for real. They're very legit. It's pretty incredible how well they were doing even without Ja, which is an amazing testament to all the role guys and how well Dylan Brooks was playing, and Bane has made a massive leap in his sophomore season. But Ja's the guy that gives you eventually Western Conference Finals type potential, maybe not this year, but I think down the road that maybe next year, the year after, that's certainly going to be a goal for them. And he's young Derrick Rose. He's that kind of impact, just unbelievably athletic, impossible to stop him getting to the rim, just good for 5 to 10 just pure crazy highlight plays a night. And you can tell, he makes his teammates better. Guys love playing with him. And, Taylor Jenkins and that front office have done a great job, in terms of the hustle as a skill side. Brandon Clark, John Conchar, the Anthony Melton, all these guys are just, role players. You could easily just kind of get lost in the shuffle in another organization. And they're stepping up and playing huge roles for Memphis, playing hard every possession and contributing to a winning identity, winning culture there for sure.
And I don't think you can understate how good Taylor Jenkins, how good of a job he's done. Because you mentioned it, the front office done a good job of piecing this roster together, but I feel like if you look through the NBA, you can say that about a lot of teams. Like, on paper, this team should work well together because, you got your hustle guys here and your stars here, but in actuality, it's not 2K, right? Like, you actually have to manage these players, and we'll get into that, what that actually is like with personalities. But you need your stars to be somebody that these other players want to be around. Like, the grinders actually have to accept that role and know that's their role. And I think Taylor Jenkins has done a fantastic job making sure that his team fits into these type of boxes and they excel in these boxes. I've been impressed by Jenkins.
No, absolutely. He's he's doing exactly what his mentor Mike Budenholzer did, and just kind of getting everybody to buy into their role. And they kind of, they play a simple sort of offense, but it's analytics based. It's based on getting to the rim. It's based on getting threes. They have their style, their blueprint. You can see the imprints of that Bucks culture. You can see, the shades of the Bud Hawks team that won 60 games and was, had all these not no name, but guys that were, career vets like Korver and Millsap and Teague, that became all-star type players for that team. You know, Memphis has a little bit of that same feel to it, where you just got, you know, guys like Brooks, for example, who's, you know, always been a really good player, but I mean he's made the leap to be like a second banana basically on a really good playoff team. You know, so yeah, everybody's buying into their role, and I think he's done a great job making sure everybody's playing defense, most importantly, and that's something that definitely is not you can't take for granted in the NBA, because it's not something that every team and every player does.
And you mentioned it off the top. I mean, we're halfway through, so we have another half of the season to be played yet. I feel like, you know, the Grizzly hype is real. People are buying into it. They're loving the jaw train. You know, the role player, I mean, Bane's a big name now. I mean, Dylan Brooks, we've known about since his days at Oregon. For you, when you watch this team, we're talking this year only, what do you think their maximum level, or how far they can go in the playoffs? Where do you think this team can go ultimately?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think they're good enough right now, honestly, to beat the Phoenix or Golden State. You know, but I think they certainly, you know, will be a favorite to at least win a series and you know, be competitive, you know, in that second round. But I think, you know, that's the big next test for Jenkins, because as great as he's been so far in the regular season, you know, we saw until Bud proved he could, you know, get over the hump last season, there were a lot of questions about him as a, you know, as a playoffs coach, as a guy who could make the adjustments. I mean, again, when you play that kind of, you know, analytic style, sometimes, and there's some credence to this, you know, it performs really well over 82 games and you're doing the right thing, you know, for the long run. But sometimes that's not what wins in a seven game series. You know, sometimes obviously you have to be able to adjust to the guys that can make mid-range jumpers, and you can't play that drop coverage every possession and so on and so forth. So, you know, we're getting ahead, but that's going to be the big next test for Jenkins. And, you know, in the past, my opinion's been that team really needed a number two to go alongside Ja, but you know, we'll see. I mean, Jaren Jackson, Bane, Brooks, each of those guys has played the role a little bit at times this season. So we'll see if it gives them enough firepower to make a long playoff run as well.
And I think that's a good starting point for the Memphis Grizzlies. Let's say everything goes right and they win a series and they're competitive in the second round. Not quite good enough, but hey, we're, you know, Grizzlies have announced they're here. I think that's a fantastic step in the right direction for this franchise. You know, you kind of move off of that grind, the grindhouse era, Tony Allen, Marcus Gasol, and into this new young, flashy, exciting young core type of team. And the way they're going to get there, I feel like, with behind Ja Morant and these other players that have built in, I think that's sustainable for a longer period of time than when otherwise you have like a few like good young players, and yeah, they sell seats and they put butts in the arena, but how many times have we seen that and it just flames out? You know, like I feel like what they're building right now is actual substantial.
Yeah, no, I mean they've got a lot of pieces that should be part of a good core, you know, for a long time. I mean, Bane, you know, for a guy that was, I think, the 30th pick, I mean, he's looking like he has the potential to be an all-star type. I mean, you know, he's a tremendous shooter. He's a big kind of point forward that can make some plays, and just a super high IQ. He's a really good defender. You know, he'll be part of a core, obviously. Jackson will be part of a core. You know, Brooks is still young enough. Zaire Williams is super high upside. You know, and there's a few other guys up and down that roster that definitely are young enough to be part of that group with Ja. But I mean, yeah, he's a transcendent talent, and whenever you have a guy like that, you have a chance. And honestly, you know, it reminds me a little bit. I think Ja's better, honestly, than John ever was. But it does remind me a little bit of what we had in DC with at his peak with John Wall and Bradley Beal. And you know, we made it to the second round of the playoffs, I think, three times, if I'm not mistaken. But you know, it was a when you have guys like that, you have a chance every year. You have a chance every night. You know, and the hard part, obviously, as we saw in DC, is how do you get over that hump? How do you go from being a, 45-50 win really good team to a team that can potentially win a championship? That's the hard part, and that's where you need, probably a free agent, or you need to pull off some sort of blockbuster, because it's really hard to do just out of your own assets unless you hit gold on just about everybody.
Absolutely. I think that's a great comparison to John Wall thing, both explosive. That's a great comparison there. We'll transition over into the Klay Thompson returning. I mean, another guy who's part of a young core, something that the Grizzlies hope they're building behind their superstar. And Klay Thompson, it's crazy. We haven't seen him play in two seasons. I mean, it's really crazy. And he comes in, has a little bit of rust, and then ultimately knocks off that rust and looked like he hadn't missed a beat. I mean, it was impressive, his return, especially that long away from an NBA game. I feel like basketball, Klay Thompson, he doesn't say a lot, but basketball is just more fun and better with Klay Thompson in it. Just the way he shoots the ball, he defends, feels like he does the right thing on the court. And so it was great to have him back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it, it's a better game with him. I mean, it was devastating to watch what he went through the last couple of years, and God willing, he could stay healthy now the rest of his career, because he's got a lot of lost time to make up for. You said like a young core, but when you lose two, almost 3 years of your career, like yeah, kind of up there now, and then Steph's up there now, and the core is nearing its end. I mean, you definitely prolonged it a little bit with Wiggins and Poole and some of the other, young talents they've really hit on. But, I think that team obviously has its eyes on a championship this year. And how sharp Klay ends up being as this goes on is going to, play a big factor in if they can get there or not. But, yeah, obviously it's way too soon to really – judge what he's going to bring. I mean, it's good. Everybody says, and it's 100% true, it's going to take at least a couple weeks of games to, for him to even be back to the speed of the game and really looking anywhere close to like himself again. But definitely great to see him back out there and hoping for, extended health and success for him.
Absolutely. I think from an analyzation standpoint, when you look at it, like his offense will always be there. I think where he may run into trouble besides stamina is going to be the defensive end. First of all, when you get older, it's harder to stay in front of these young guys, and you add these injuries, ACL and Achilles, that's going to be hard. He'll always be able to shoot. He'll always be able to space. He'll always be able to pass. But I think it's going to be where we're going to really see a deterioration, or at least some the effects of these injuries will be on that defensive end. But do they need it at this point, or are they just looking for another shooter? We'll see how Kerr gets it together and how he pieces everything together with this roster he has.
Yeah, and it's been interesting. I think the first two games Klay's been limited to like 20 minutes, which is a fair start for a guy, obviously, that's been out as long as he has. But, like we said, I mean, the fact that he's coming into it, it's hard, too, when you're not making your debut at the beginning of the season or just missing a month of the season. I mean, he's coming in at the halfway point, right? And he's, he's playing 20 minutes, okay? So maybe in a week he gets up to 25, and maybe in 2 weeks he gets up to 30. But, even that is still a ways away from, getting up near the 35 to 40, he's going to have to play in the playoffs. So it's got a long way to go. Got to see how everything responds to the grind of the season and to all the contact. But thankfully they have a lot of depth on this team. I mean, they've obviously gotten so much out of Gary Payton. We've talked a ton about on this pod,
mm-hmm.
Poole and Otto Porter. I mean, tons of really solid role players. So, thankfully they can kind of ease him back in. There's not a ton of pressure. It's not like he's coming onto the Lakers, where you're hovering around 500 and in danger of being in that play-in game. They have a little bit of a cushion, and all those things are good things for him and for being able to, ease him back into it at his own pace.
Absolutely. Okay, audience, what we're going to do here, I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit. I'm going to pick Brian's brain just about the interior workings of the organizations that he's worked in, or and what really goes on in the NBA. So we'll get to some story time here in a little bit. But my first question for you, Brian, and I was actually thinking about this, and I was thinking of you when I was watching the game. It's like, we always talk about, okay, you get these players from college and you want these young players so that you can mold them and you want to develop them. But in your opinion, why does it feel like some franchises are just so much better at developing talent? Now, is it really that much to do with like the coaching staff is better, or like, what have you seen from the inside that's like, okay, this is how development works and here's why these franchises are better at it?
It's a great question. Honestly, it's a billion-dollar question. It's one that, I don't think anybody really has figured out to perfection. What I mean by that is, even if a guy is playing well and is, part of a good team, and like take a guy like Bane, for example. I mean, it's still a huge question of how much is nature versus nurture. How much of it is just, he was one of the best shooters in college and is a high IQ guy. And, maybe he'd be doing this anywhere. Maybe you could stick him in Detroit or Orlando and he'd be having an awesome season too. But then you also look at some guys like, if they are in a little bit worse culture, like, Oklahoma City or Houston or whatever, are they being harmed by that? Or are they being held back from, reaching their potential? So I think it's really, really hard to tell. And a lot of it also has to do with, what kind of role they have for you. There's guys that, you look at like Wiseman and Golden State and when he comes back too, thankfully, they're not going to need a ton out of him. They're going to be able to use him as a bench big and play him for 10, 15 minutes, so maybe he can thrive in that role, and maybe that'll be better for him than having to go somewhere and having to play, Marvin Bagley minutes the way he played in his first couple seasons. And, maybe you get a little overexposed that way. So I don't know. I mean, the long answer obviously is that it's really hard, to tell how much, is coaching, how much is development, how much is intrinsic. So I don't think there's any perfect answer, but teams are certainly still trying to learn more and more about, what kind of puts that puzzle together.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, it truly is like a billion-dollar question. I mean, is it the attitude of a guy coming out? Well, his attitudes may change when he's 25, when he was 18, when he interviewed him, So it's tough, especially in this league when you get him younger and younger and, now, hey, you're the face of the franchise.
Yeah, and I always say too, how much of it is, how much of it is guys feeling like they were spurned? How much of guys' success comes from, Draymond Green being a second rounder and Jokic being a second rounder? Those guys have a tremendous amount of extra fire, I feel like, from being discounted, from feeling like a lot of teams passed on them. Whereas obviously, I talk about John, for example, but he's the number one pick. He's a five-star recruit. He's been the guy forever. Some of that certainly led to some complacency, from him. I feel like, if he worked as hard as, a Darius Garland type or some of these, super skilled guys that are coming into the league, he would have been a Hall of Famer, but he didn't have that same drive, that same work ethic. So yeah, it's really, really hard to forecast. It's really hard to nail, and you're seeing even some of these teams, the Spurs were always the, kind of the golden model, that everybody wanted to be like. And it's like, they're in a terrible place right now. They got crushed by Houston tonight. They look just awful for the most part. It's really, really difficult.
All right. Now, another thing that I want to get your opinion on here is, so I think there's a disconnect between some people. I don't want to loop all of us in because I think that's unfair, but people who watch these games and they see some skirmishes or they hear about some skirmishes, and you know, bringing it up, one of the ones that was all over is Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood getting it to their assistant coach, John Lucas, right? Like, that was a big thing. Like, oh, I can't believe this and that. I mean, you mentioned one before we hopped on here. I mean, KCP, Montrezl Harrell, you know, they were teammates elsewhere. They get into it. So I think when the average person sees that, it doesn't really know how a locker room works. They're like, oh, either it's out of control, coaches lost control, or, oh, these guys hate each other. I think they just don't quite get it. So, Brian, on this podcast, why don't you help them out with understanding, you know, really what's going on when we see these type of deals?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like I told you before we started, I mean, for every one story that gets out, there's probably 5 to 10 that don't, you know. So this is much more commonplace than people realize. I can't tell you how many times at a halftime in particular, guys had to be separated or just felt like there was about to be a brawl, you know, before the coaching staff even would go in there at halftime. Sometimes we'd just, you know, be standing outside the locker room and hear the players shouting at the top of the lungs at each other and you know, cussing each other out and seeming like they're going to kill each other. I mean, it's a hype, obviously hyper masculine, super alpha environment. And yeah, I mean, people don't realize, you know, when you're underachieving, when you're, you know, down 15 or whatever at halftime, you know, you're watching the game at home and you're like, okay, it's 15 points, whatever, we can come back. Not that big a deal. But like, you know, when you're in that, when you're, you know, part of that and the coach is livid and then guys are, you know, feeling like they're not getting the ball or guys are being selfish or whatever, you know, you can walk in at a halftime down 15 and, you know, literally you're afraid that somebody's going to get socked in the face. I mean, that stuff, again, it happens. I mean, it happened at practices sometimes that didn't get out. You know, guys would fight each other in practice. You know, you look at, obviously we're a basketball podcast, but I mean, you know, how sensitive, I mean, everybody obviously talked about, and there's so much to it, but I mean, I think that the gist of the Antonio Brown thing is he took it so personally what Bruce Arians, you know, said to him that spurred him going psycho and taking his stuff off and running out of the, you know, the stadium. But I mean, the Washington football team had a guy, Jonathan Allen and Payne, punch each other on the sideline. I mean, it's, yeah, the stuff is commonplace, and you know, it's overblown. I feel like when it does happen, that Chris Mannix, I think, said that the Rockets should like cut Kevin Porter. It's like, literally, he got suspended for the, you know, the one game, right, which is fair, okay, but then he comes out the next night and hits a, you know, buzzer beating game winner. I mean, he's a big time talent. He's still a kid. He's still obviously, you know, an emotional guy that's got to rein it in at times. But you know, you definitely don't give up on talents like that because they've, you know, sometimes got a little trouble controlling the emotions. There's you could learn to rein it in, but you know, you can't teach the kind of skill set that a guy like Porter has.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a good old adage, right? Like coach speak in a way, almost like, oh, I'd rather, you know, him have the fire and me rein it in than try to teach it to him because I can't do that, or, you know, whatever the saying is. But I mean, I haven't been in the locker room like you, but, you know, obviously playing sports on a level like this. And the other thing too, I mean, just as guys, man, I mean, we get just sick of hanging out with the same guys, you know, like they just wear you out sometimes. Like, yeah, hear the same voice, hear the same jokes. It's like, dude, and then you're not getting the ball on top of that and you feel like you should be, and now you're adding losing. Like, yeah, and especially as in this hyper masculine, hyper intense environment, there's definitely, you know, going to be some boil over. So I'm not shocked when you tell me that it happens a lot more than we know about as the general public, which kind of surprises me. I feel like it's so salacious that, you know, people would want to be tweeting that out, or like, oh yeah, did you hear what happened in this one? It's like, oh, and starting comparing it like it's high school or something.
Yeah, well, now they do, I guess. I mean, now freaking everything, it seems like, leaks to, you know, because Shams is every single player and agent and coach and, you know, GM is texting him nonstop. And it's like, why? I don't even understand. Like, you know, like the Wizards thing, for example. I mean, somebody leaked that. You know, you could speculate. I mean, is it – Tommy Shepard? Is it a player? I mean, but like, why? I mean, what purpose, you know, what do you gain from, like, having Shams, you know, tweet out your locker room dirt? I mean, I just, yeah, I've never really understood that. And I, you know, I do think it is getting out more than ever because, you know, like we said, everybody's on their phone now. Everybody is, you know, spreading stuff out. Whereas 10 years ago, it was, you know, we handle stuff internally. Nothing leaves this room, you know, snitches get stitches type deal. You know, nothing would possibly ever make it out of the locker room. And now obviously it's, you know, more and more becoming a, you know, our business is everybody's business. Whereas, like you said, I mean, yeah, it's a long season. I mean, like, I don't, you know, KCP and Rel, they might be, you know, friends. They might be great together. Who knows? I don't know their real interpersonal relationship. It might have just been one stupid little blow up that looked like, you know, like yesterday, for example, that Rel was like pissed that he didn't, that KCP didn't pass him the ball on the last play of the first half. And like, you know, you start chirping at each other and guys just, you know, kind of go nuts for a minute, you know, but it passes. You know, it's like having brothers is what the, you know, the football players said. I mean, brothers are going to fight, players are going to fight. It doesn't mean they, you know, hate each other or want to, you know, to murder each other.
Yeah, I could, very well said. And good to know. There's a little insight for you. Brian, before we get out of here, I just saw something about the Ben Simmons saga, the never-ending saga with Ben Simmons. Apparently, there's still a stalemate between the organization and the Ben Simmons camp. So with Rich Paul calling the shots over there, how do you think this ends? Like, are they going to be able to trade him? Like, just what's your gut feeling on this thing, knowing the inner workings of the league?
Yeah, I think they trade him. I mean, he's not going to play another game as a Sixer. I mean, that's my only real gut feeling. I guess you could old take expose that and, you know, who knows with the way the league's going. But, like, you know, we even saw, I mean, from the, oh, he's coming back, he's practicing, he's getting himself ready. And that lasted, what, all of 15 minutes before he got thrown out of practice. And,
yep.
You know, the franchise is like, okay, you can leave again. I mean, he doesn't, yeah, he's doing everything he can to get the heck out of there. He doesn't have any interest in showing up and playing for them again. You know, Daryl Morey obviously wants a lot for him, but at the end of the day, you know, you're not in a perfect position to, you know, to demand the king's ransom right now because, you know, he doesn't want to play for you. And on top of that, you know, there are a lot of questions still about his mental state, you know, how he's going to bounce back from, you know, getting the yips basically in the playoffs. You know, you hear some good packages kind of being thrown about, whether it's, you know, Sacramento, I know, wants him a lot. Who else? I know the Pelicans have been mentioned, right? There's another one I know that I'm forgetting that's been the Timberwolves, you know, have apparently really, really wanted him there. So, you know, I don't know. My gut, I guess, is that he gets straight at the deadline, but Morey, you know, has proven he can be a little bit stubborn at times. So, we've got an ultimate stubborn off between him and Rich Paul.
That's for sure. That's for sure. I don't know if anybody's going to give an inch. Maybe they'll just do the stubborn off until, you know, like Ben Simmons gets too old to play or something. I don't know. He's got plenty of money.
Fine, 20 million. He's been fined like 10 million already this season. Fair. Or something. That's got to be making a dent at some, like,
yeah, at some,
you know,
point.
When it's like 50,000 or 100,000, it's like, yeah, it's pocket change. But like $10 million, like, that's, you know, he's getting fined like half his salary. Like, at some point, you know, that's you'd think you'd be feeling that a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would also think a 6'10 player dunk a wide open, but I've Ben Simmons, different cat. Yeah. I'm just a bitter Sixers fan, so that's, I want to get your take on it because I think he'll get traded as well. Like, putting on an objective hat, I just don't think as a general manager you can keep a player like that around. You know, I think it just kind of festers and is poisonous to our locker room. So I think at some point, you know, Morey's going to have to stop being so stubborn and accept the package he may think isn't fair value. Because listen, man, he put a stinker the last time he was on the floor. He's not. Yeah. The Ben Simmons we know.
Yeah, and the great thing is, too, I mean, that they're proving this season, you know, that they don't necessarily need him. You know, that they're obviously not, you know, they're not first in the East, but they're six games over. You know, that they're having a really good season. I mean, Maxey and a lot of the guards they have stepped up and proven they can kind of, you know, handle that position, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, I think obviously something's better than nothing. I mean, I don't think, you know, Minnesota, I mean, who was talked about, like, who I'm blanking again on who Minnesota was apparently offering. But it's like, you know, it's role players probably that'll help you more than, you know, Ben just pouting and not showing up to anything. Right. You know, that'll – so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The never-ending saga, we'll have to keep checking back in with that one. But, Brian, thanks for joining me again today talking basketball. I appreciate all the insight that you can provide us, you know, kind of taking us behind the curtain and our audience really, you know, teach us about what really goes on. And I know you're still doing a bunch of those video breakdowns. It's been fantastic. I've been tuning into those. So if you want to plug your social media so people can follow your work and interact with you there.
Appreciate that. Yeah, just Scout with Brian on YouTube, Instagram, and the podcast, and then on Twitter at B Oeringer NBA. And I know you're plugging away still with, you know, some of the football stuff. And I'm guessing you'll have some playoff bets for your followers on there.
Yeah, absolutely. Just previewed the NFL playoffs. If you want to follow the Roundtable, that's another podcast that I do. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at BWAKAI, BWAKAI. You can just, you know, kind of check in with me there. But yeah, big NFL podcast recently. Obviously, just had the college football national championship game, which was big. But yeah, a lot of focus on the gridiron. So we're getting excited now that we got things starting over this weekend.
Awesome. Yeah, it's I didn't realize until it was about the third quarter that the you know, championship game was that night. So that shows you how plugged into college football I am. I was busy watching the, you know, Cavs Pelicans or something regular season game. Right. But yeah, you know, to each their own. So everybody's got a thing, you know.
Exactly. I think we need to get you some more screens, you know, so you can just bounce it around.
If I had them, I'd watch 5 NBA games. So
yeah, true.
Wouldn't change much.
That's true. All right, Brian. Well, appreciate you joining me again. It's always a pleasure talking basketball with you. And for the audience out there, we appreciate you tuning in to us, and we will talk to you next week.
Peace.